Blog Talk Radio.
People, welcome to Financial Intelligence. This is Stephen Hutchinson, your host, welcoming you to Financial Intelligence, where we discuss, where we elaborate, where we analyze, where we critique finance from many different aspects, particularly finance as it is a personal accountability. As we need finance and a proper finance understanding, and most essentially, how do we apply our understanding of finance? Therefore, this show is called Financial Intelligence because it looks at finance from a personal finance perspective for the individual, and how can we apply these principles that we learn to our individual unique situation and circumstance. So to accomplish that, what we do is we invite many guests who bring much value to the table. They bring value from many different aspects. We have spoken to people who have brought to the table some expertise in monetization. people who have brought expertise in automation, people who have brought expertise in sole proprietorships, corporations, how to get a business off the ground. So we approach financial intelligence from many aspects. And today, our particular subject is on how our psychological and emotional condition can either hinder us or help us in our financial pursuit. So today, in order to convey the value of that, I have reached out to Mr. David Newby, who was brought to our platform by the Tribe Family Channel, that network. So we have a network going on here, and we'll be able to bring many brilliant people to the table. Now, Mr. David Newby, he is a very well-respected global developer. He's a life strategist, a trainer, a speaker, an author, a business developer. So he has developed his own business. He is a motivator, among many other things. So he is bringing this to the table today. We want to zero in on this subject, and we welcome your questions. So now, without further ado, I would like to introduce to you Mr. David Newby. Welcome, Mr. David Newby.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hutchinson. You need not call me Mr. David. I should be calling you Mr. rather than you calling me Mr. So thank you for having me. Thank you, Tribe Family Channel, for doing an incredible job with the network. I appreciate you guys having me, and thanks for joining in, everyone that's listening this evening.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. Definitely. Yes, I mean, yes, I do refer to you as Mr. because I just think it's important, man. It's important that we meet each other on a platform of mutual respect. I think that way we'll get the best from each other. I can give you my best. You can give me my best if we can meet on a mutual respect. So that is thank you, sir. Now, I would just like to ask, if you don't mind, please, could you just give us a little bit of background about yourself as an individual, who you are, so we can understand more about you, and then we can launch into our discussion, sir.
Absolutely. For many of you out there that may be listening and don't know me, I'm pretty much active doing a lot of different things. I think Mr. Hutchinson summed it up great when he said that I'm a global developer. Under that general umbrella of global developer, I develop multiple businesses, different programs and services and products and so forth. But for today's purposes, I like to be classified as a life development strategist, which is my coaching and training company, because I want to help empower people that are listening to be more successful, especially in the financial realm, if I can. As far as me and my background, I'm from Maryland, born in Baltimore, pretty much lived here all my life, spent a little bit of time in Boston and you know, didn't really stay there too long, but I had a friend up there and eventually moved back here. I'm still in Baltimore. I pretty much started this whole quest with business and finance and so forth about 15, 20 years ago. I actually ventured out on my own and decided to go ahead and start a distribution company selling wholesale security products. That was the first time I decided. I was around 20, 22 years old. I decided that I like this business thing. I like the prospects of it. Let me go out there and try my hand at it. So one of the first encounters I had with business was when I ordered a whole bunch of products, and I figured that I would just sell them all, and it didn't really happen that way. You know? I had a whole bunch of products. You know, we think we're going to, you know, conquer the world when you're young, and it just is not that easy. So I caught a few harsh lessons from some of the people that I tried to sell to. One gentleman, I was not dressed apart. And he said, you know, young man, I like your drive, I like the ambition, but you are not ready for business. He said, no.
Wow.
I like what you're doing. So he bought everything I had in my car at the time, because I was pretty much, you know, broken in one life, you know, just some ambition to keep on, you know. So that worked out a little bit. I stayed in that business for a couple of years and eventually transitioned into an international brokerage company where I was helping people trade personal assets, personal capital assets, trucks, vans, cars, boats, and things of that nature. Fast forward about 5 to 10 years, I eventually got into coaching and training. I decided that there are a lot of people out there motivating people and successful at selling quote-unquote personal development and information products. So I tried my hand at that, and that worked out pretty well. I developed a huge following. I worked with some very influential people in the field of personal development, and I figured that personal development is something that I will always do because I think that part of my gift and part of my calling in God is to help people develop. So no matter what I'm doing in terms of business, if I'm over here or I'm over here doing this or I'm in real estate, at the crux of what I do will always be personal development, finding ways to help people and share information with them. So that's kind of where I am today. I actually founded a movement as of late called Revive, and that's what I'm pretty much focused on right now, that and my book. So I do other stuff as well, but those are my two babies right now.
Excellent, sir. Excellent. That's a solid background too. I mean, especially that disappointment that you experience in the sales field.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that was pretty impactful right there. Now, actually, that also is a perfect segue into what we're discussing today, because we're discussing the psychological and emotional impact on our financial pursuits, like. What is the psychological and emotional impact? Because many people, I mean, who doesn't want more money? I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't know anyone personally has ever told me that they do not want more money.
That's right.
Do you know anyone has told you, you know, conclusively that they have no desire to have any more money?
Well, I've had people ask me, can I hold a dollar, but not that, you know. So that's not a common question. But, you know, I love the intro music that you had. I believe, was it the OJs, or you got to correct me if I'm
wrong.
Yes,
that is the OJs.
The OJs, yes. Okay. I'm not that young. So the thing is, they say, you know, do bad things and do good things with it. It's not a matter of wanting it. It's a matter of what you're going to do with it. So the psychological element and the emotional components play a huge part in one's ability to not only keep money, but to grow money and get more money, because if they're doing the wrong thing with it long enough, you'll be broke in no time.
Now, as I was mentioning about the segue, now that what you experienced in the sales field, things did not go your way. Could you speak a little bit about the psychological and the emotional effect that experience had on you in your pursuit? Because you went to sales in pursuit of increasing your revenue, right? Increasing your income. So
right.
When things did not go your way, can you talk about, you know, especially as you are a life strategist, can you speak from a strategist perspective, like what type of effect that had on you psychologically and emotionally?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, you know, sales is really the backbone of business. I mean, you have to sell something to make money in business. So no matter what you're doing, your business has to sell. So it's a matter of, in terms of the psychological aspect of business and finances and so forth, that's huge to be able to not only see the process of sales as something that's necessary, but to motivate yourself to keep going despite the fact that things may not be working out your way. So when I was out there early on in business, I just pretty much, you know, I went and I went and I went, and it took a lot of boldness, and I encountered a lot of rejection. But ultimately, when I sold that one, that box, whatever you want to call it, to that one store owner, he was actually he owned a convenience store. And when he bought that, it showed me that, you know what, this is possible. So in the context of what I'm doing right now and what other people out there may be doing in business or in life period, when you're trying to sell, or I don't want to say sell, but let's just say earn income, you have to find ways to motivate yourself and keep going. And in today's time, kind of like speeding it up, whenever I face a situation of quote-unquote selling, I have to sell a product or service, or I get to sell a product or service or get a new customer, the thing is this: you have to face the fact that you're going to fail. You're going to fail sometimes, but as long as you get one in the midst of all that failure, it kind of pans out. I say it like this. I kind of liken it like this. You have to – and I learned this because, you know, when I talk about personal development, coaching, and so forth, I apply this stuff to my life first and foremost. See, I kind of look at the strategies that I need to implement to be more effective at X, Y, Z. So, for instance, when I'm out, quote-unquote, trying to close a sale or something like that, after a while you face so many rejections, you have to find something within yourself to make you keep on going. So what I did was I created this kind of this system, if you will, that I mentally say to myself, okay, let's look at the animal kingdom real quick. Now, I know that eagles have a kill rate of 5%, I believe. That basically means that I think 1 out of 20 animals that they go for, they kill, right? Something like that. So
Right. That's eagles, you're saying, huh?
Yeah, eagles. So if we look at ourselves as eagles, which are that we, you know, an animal that we esteem as to be a very very highly regarded bird, if they're able to still survive and thrive and be the champions of the bird kingdom at only 5% kill rate, why can't we face 20 people, 20 customers, and just close one and give us that eagle equivalent? So it kind of changes your mind, because it's saying, okay, if you've only prospected 10 people, well, go for another 10, because chances are if you close, I mean, when you get to the 20th one, you'll close at least one, and you're performing at an eagle rate. You know what I mean? So you even at that low rate, the 5%, an eagle is able to thrive and be the champion in the bird kingdom. And lions the same way. Lions have like a 33% kill rate as far as I know. So 1 in 3 sales, or 1 in 3 animals they go for, they quote-unquote kill. So you just have to find ways like that to change your perception of the process of selling and growing your business, never giving up, but keeping on and finding ways to improve your tactics, you know, learning, staying educated, connected with people, being connected with people that are successful and know how to do things better than you. So that's what it's all about, just moving forward and never giving up and finding creative ways to become more efficient and effective at what you're doing in terms of selling.
Well, I really like that analogy that you're using, you know, because it's very realistic, and it's natural. It's natural, and it's probably something that most people don't think about. You know, when you talk about the kill rate of an eagle is only 5%, but the eagle still survives.
They're
surviving. You know, even though their kill rate is only 5%, which also means that their failure rate is 95%. Right? So
that's the first time I looked at that like that. That's a good point.
Right. So if your failure rate is 95%, to have the wherewithal and the determination to go on beyond that, in my eyes, that's definitely the characteristic of a successful person. I believe that that's something that is within the person, because it's not in the circumstance itself, because the circumstance in the analogy of the eagle, the circumstance is I'm going to fail 95% of the time. So now let's just look at that. Let's say that we sat down and, you know, we were about to begin a business. Like, for instance, since we're using sales, in sales, if we knew that we were going to fail 95% of the time, how many of us would take one step forward, looking at it from a psychological and an emotional perspective? What do you think? How many people would proceed?
Well, let me just say this. The ones that have stick-to-itiveness, the people that understand that they'll fail, they don't care. To be honest with you, I've done a lot of different types of businesses, even network marketing and so forth. And the whole process with people that are champions, and I say champions, with having the mindset of I'm not gonna ever quit until I get what I want. They know going in often that they have to fail X amount of time before they get that one close. You know, so I think in any aspect of business, that's kind of like the mindset you have to take on, that if you want to be successful, like for instance, the book that I have, I took it to a literary agent. I was approved by her, and you know, she was pretty much at the point of, okay, I can't sell this thing, and I was at the point of, okay, I don't care how many publishers rejected it. Let's get all of these no's out of the way until we get to a yes, and I would just keep going. And I just eventually just published it myself. The literary agent bowed out, but that's the whole thing with success. It doesn't matter who bows out, so long as you're in it for yourself for the long haul. you're going to get the failures. Let the failures teach you to be more successful the next time around, because you all get another at-bat in life. And going real quick back to the eagle analogy, think of it like this. You know, God so provided for the eagle that even at that terrible, dismal, quote-unquote, kill rate, they are still able to be at the apex of the bird kingdom. And if eagles can do that, and we're made in God's image being man, how much more of a success rate should we have as being men? So if eagles are performing at 5%, let's just hypothetically say that a man hunting, I would imagine that a man with a weapon can probably achieve a higher, quote-unquote, hunt rate. In that case, why do we have to settle for a lower end of the 5% kill rate? Why not up the ante and improve our skills, improve our personal development, our presentation skills, and so forth, so we can get a closing rate of 25%, 30%? You know what I mean? We don't have to settle for a lower end, but even if we settle for a lower end close rate, who cares? God will still provide for us at a low end, and we can still eat, we can still thrive, so long as we never give up. That's the bottom line, never giving up.
Wow. That's that is the issue. The issue is not giving up. Now, giving up and not giving up is also a separate subject matter from the business, because with the principle that you're talking about now is a principle that would have to be applied in any business. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Right? This principle of not giving up. So that not giving up, does that have to do with one's emotional and psychological condition, this whether or not a person gives up easy or doesn't give up easy? Are they related?
I think a bit of both, psychological and emotional. I mean, psychological is being tough and training your mind to think past all of the challenges and so forth, but emotional, when you want to cry, you know, when you do cry, to just suck it up and keep on going, you know, because it hurts to be rejected, or it hurts to struggle, or it hurts not to get the victory or the successes that you want. It hurts, but the bottom line is being able to look at the things within you maybe trying to kill your success or your financial freedom. So, for instance, if you're going out there, you're starting a new business, and you know in your mind, like a lot of people know when they start new businesses, they're really optimistic, which is good. But sometimes reality hits and reality strikes and says, okay, this is going to take a little longer than you expected, or a little more is required than you expected. That's when we have to say, okay, my mind is telling me negative things. It's telling me that I won't succeed. It's telling me that I should give up. It's telling me I should quit. Then I hear the naysayers around me telling me I should give up. This will never work. Da 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 da. Then we have to say, okay, this is psychological. This is something that's trying to get me to throw in the towel. So what I'll do to offset that is I'll take on a new mindset. I'll change my mindset. I'll have an unlimited mindset. I'll have a higher level of thinking. I'll think of myself as one who was put on this earth to rule, to be successful financially, and to subdue the earth. I'm one that's made in God's image. I'm strong. I'm powerful. Look in the mirror even and talk to yourself. Like, I can do this. I was built to win. I was built to be successful. I was built to thrive financially. So that's the psychological side. The emotional side is pretty much the same. It's training yourself to not so much give in to your emotions, although emotions play a certain part in terms of finance and success. But when the negative emotions kick in, we have to have something in place that automatically combats that. It has to be like a system in place that when you feel the negative emotions or the negative mindset kicking in, that you're all set automatically to provide instantly and alleviate those negative thoughts. Because if we think long enough or our emotions get negative over us, it's hard to do business. I take it back to this one time, Mr. Hutchinson. Years ago, I was doing I was like an international trade broker. I pretty much help people trade their capital assets. I mean, like, you know, boats and cars and things like that. And I had went to this this car dealer, and I had this big order, I think like from a government agency or something like that, that wanted to order a lot of cars. So I tried to broker the deal with the car dealer. And long story short, we had been in talks for about probably 3 to 4 weeks back and forth about prices and so forth. And eventually he said he couldn't do X, Y, Z, or he wouldn't move forward with the deal. So my young nature, I was offended. I was mad. My emotions, I wore them on my sleeve, and they came out. You know, our emotions come out when we're talking about money sometimes, right? So we have to check them. But my emotions came out, and I think I pretty much I didn't so much scream at him, but I pretty much told him a piece of my mind, and I was pretty much upset because he didn't want to go forward with the deal. But he said, he was very mature, very professional about it. He simply said, "I'm sorry you feel that way." And that was it. That showed me a lot, like, wow, like he's not even affected by it. And it showed me that I have to learn how to control my emotions, because that can kill you in business. If you can't control your emotions when money's on the line, and you know, emotions to a certain level are okay, but if they hinder your business or hinder your finances, we have to learn how to check them and not let it be so much about emotional. We have to look at the other parts of finances, you know, the analytical side and things like that. Otherwise, our emotions, our mindset even can kill us, not in a literal sense, obviously, but, you know, it can really hurt us financially if we're not careful.
Well, maybe that, too. It might even literally kill us if we're not careful. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying. And now, and I think you're digging right there to a nerve, and the nerve that I could feel there is that nerve of the connection between our emotions and money. Because as I speak to people and as I gain experience and as I'm learning and as I am asking questions and getting answers and interviewing and researching, what I'm finding is that most people really do not consciously recognize the connection between their emotions and money.
Mm-hmm.
They just it's just not visible. It's kind of an invisible thing. People just think, oh, well, you know, I love money. I want money. Boy, I just want more and more money. But in reality, our emotional relationship with money can be quite turbulent and quite fearful.
Mm-hmm.
If you closely analyze people's relationship with money, some people really believe, because they have never had a substantial amount of assets, resources, mm-hmm. power, and money, they are convinced that actually they don't deserve it.
Mm.
They should not have it.
Yeah, that's
yes, go ahead, speak.
No, I'm sorry, you go ahead. Sorry to cut you off.
Oh, no, I just wanted to pass that to you, because I think that is such a powerful thing holding back so many individuals. They are
mm-hmm.
held back because they have a subconscious fear of actually attaining a platform where they have wealth or they have power, because they really don't believe that they should, or that they can, or that they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I mean, you know what? Even for this call in the past few days, I was meditating on that same subject, because the company that...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. You still there?
Wealth type of mindset. And
okay.
Oftentimes, that's like the biggest battle that I face, because they don't want to receive, and they think they're not supposed to have, and they think that money is the root of all evil and all this other stuff that the world or whatever taught them. And I'm flipping it around on them, saying that, no, like, you know, God wants you to prosper. Money's not evil. It's a matter of money is this. Money is a form of exchange to simply take care of yourself and your responsibilities, to enjoy life, and to do good and serve others and serve God. That's what it is. So if it's being used right, God is pretty much looking for good stewards and people to do right with money. So when people are doing right with it, he wants to put more of it into our hands, because we're doing right with it. If we're doing wrong with it, he wants to put it in somebody else's hands. So we should never have that mindset of we don't deserve it or da-da-da-da-da. If we don't deserve it, we may want to look in the mirror and see what we're doing wrong or what our mindset or emotions are regarding money. Because if your mind and your heart and so forth are in the right places, then by all means, you definitely probably do deserve it, because I'm sure you would do good works with it. You would help communities. You would help feed the poor. You would help do God's work. You would help bless your family. You would take care of yourself and your family. You would do good with it. But I say it like this: if you're not doing good with it, why would you need money? It's like this. If you're doing wrong with the penny, why would God give you $1 million? If you're doing wrong with $10, why would God give you $100,000? He's very, very, very diligent about his money. He wants it to return to him. He wants it to grow. So if he, and we, I say God because there's, everything belongs to God, the earth and the fullness thereof. I'm sorry, I heard like background noise. But
oh yeah, his, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No problem. But the earth is his, so it's like this. If we're doing bad with it, he doesn't want to bless it because it caused a lot more destruction than anything. But if we're doing good with it, he wants to give us more of his stuff so that we can do his work and we can bless people and we can raise our families and we can take care of the poor and so forth. So that's a terrible mindset to have, the I don't deserve it. And the funny thing is this, Mr. Hutchinson, is this. People that I would rather take someone that had the right emotions and right mindset / psychology with regard to money than someone with $1 billion in the bank or whatever you want to call it. Because I'm quite sure with the person with the right mindset and the right psychology about money would grow and get money, would get and grow money. But the person with the wrong psychology and the wrong emotions with regard to money would lose it in no time. And we see that happen all the time. When people sometimes take on the wrong agendas, they have different schemes and tactics to get money, and they cheat systems and all that stuff, it comes back on them. But if you take a person with a stable mind and the right emotions and the right heart with regard to money and so forth, these people are blessed. The favor walks, you know, the favor is upon them, and they just get blessed and blessed and blessed. So I want to be around people like that all day.
Excellent. Absolutely. I agree with you, sir. And right now, I just want to inform everyone that you are listening to Financial Intelligence. This is Stephen Hutchinson, your host. And today, our guest is Mr. David Newby, who is a global developer, a respected global developer, as well as a life strategist. And today, he's lending us his contribution in relation to life strategists, as being a life strategist, to help us understand how to execute a strategy and how to create a strategy so that we can become financially intelligent and financially secure. And the reason why I press financially is because if we cannot feed ourselves, everything else is going to be so much more complicated and difficult and challenging. If you can't take care of your basic fundamental needs, yourself, your family, your loved ones, any problems outside of that are just going to be insurmountable. This is a very fundamental thing. Just as David was talking about the kill rate of the eagle or the lion, they have a kill rate, but they do have a success rate. And we as people, as individuals, as men, as women, also have to be able to care for ourselves. The first law of nature is self-preservation. So if I can't take care of myself, if I can't feed myself, how can I feed my family? If I can't feed my family, how can I feed my community? If I can't feed my community, how can I feed my people? So that's why we bring it back to this particular issue here in financial intelligence. And also just for a moment right here, right now, I would just like to play an advertisement right now from Financial Intelligence. And then right after that, we'll come right back. And, David, when we come back, can you give us your contact information and any websites that you'd like to share with people
Absolutely.
So they can follow you and find you? We'll be right back when you do that then, sir. Okay?
Right.
Thank you very much. Be right back.
Greetings, my people. Power up. This is Stephen Hutchinson of Financial Intelligence. I have a company called Power Tax. And in Power Tax, we do your taxes expertly and accurately, but we also answer your questions to help you understand what's going on within your tax return. And the result of that is that your financial intelligence shall multiply. Your financial literacy will increase. So reach out. We do tax returns for all 50 states. Consequently, you do not have to come to my office, but you can reach out to us at powertax.com. That's Power Tax with two X's, PowerTax.com, or you can reach us at 610-955-6508. That's 610-955-6508. I implore to you, don't go to strangers. Reach out to PowerTax. And remember, be powerful.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Stephen Hutchinson, your host of Financial Intelligence, with my guest, David Newby. David, can you please give us your contact information and any websites that you would like to guide people to, please?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, all of my energy for the most part are divided between my book and my current movement. My current movement is called the Revive Movement, and you can find out more about that at revive-movement.com. It's a movement focused on ushering in the end-time revival by turning people back to God and to success. So revive-movement.com, you can check us out there. I have a Facebook community revolving around the Revive Movement. It's at bit.ly/Revive Movement. So bit.ly/Revive Movement. I also have a LinkedIn community full of professionals that are focused on empowerment and success and personal development. We have about 10,000, 11,000 people in that LinkedIn group. You're welcome to join it. It's at bit.ly/join, J-O-I-N, the E-Z. So bit.ly/join, the E-Z. So the Empowerment Zone, that's that group. And you can find me on Twitter at David G. Newby. And with those three or four, I guess, contacts, you can pretty much keep up with me and all I'm doing and any products or services I may have out there, including my book. I just like empowering people. So just let's stay connected, and I hope that you can definitely join a couple of my communities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
Now, we're into the latter portion of the show now. We have about 20 minutes or so left. And, David, I think we talked about that dirty little financial secret.
I want to
bring that up a little later, not just yet. So you got okay. Something for us, right? Am I correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So just to let you know, David's going to share with us one of his what we call dirty little financial secrets, okay, a little bit later before the show is over. But right now we got a few more moments left. So, David, I want to ask you about this issue. It's something which I call emotional gravity. Emotional gravity is what I consider to be our non-recognized emotional state, our non-recognized psychological state. So, in other words, let's say I'm 50-year-old man. I'm 50 years old physically, but emotionally I may be 13.
Mm-hmm.
See, you know what I'm saying? Just because I'm 50 physically doesn't mean I'm 50 years emotionally. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? That I have that much emotional experience or emotional maturity, because I see a lot of what I call 50-year-old teenagers.
That's right.
50, you know, they got the goatee and they got the salt and pepper goatee going on and all that. But if I look through all that and actually analyze them emotionally in their behavior, their beliefs, their convictions, I would really have to summarize. Well, you know, actually, I think you're still a teenager. You know, the way that you're looking at the world, the way you're dealing with your challenges, the way you're dealing with the world around you, the way you're behaving is the behavior of a 13-year-old or a teenager. So in relation to that, this thing I call emotional gravity is that if we don't actually mature emotionally and psychologically, you could give us a better circumstance or situation, or even put us in a better circumstance or situation, but we won't be able to remain there. We're going to fall back down to our natural gravity. Could you elaborate on that principle?
Well, first and foremost, your principles were lovely. I can elaborate a little bit, I guess, based on what I hear. But, yeah, I like that because I've been there, and I've, and in fact, probably been on both ends of it, being emotionally immature, but also being the other one that was mature when other people weren't mature about the whole thing. But I want to say, yeah, I mean, I agree on all points because I say it like this. By and large, you can only get the level of financial success as you are personally developed. So if you're immature emotionally or something's not, you know, right with you, quote-unquote, emotionally, then I go back to what you just said, that, yeah, you can quickly lose whatever you gained if you can, in fact, gain it, because it's like this. If you have, like, poor people skills and people say things to you and you get offended and you show your emotions on your sleeve and you're unable to compose yourself, that affects your interpersonal relations, which means it'll be hard for people to want to work with, hard for you to get people to want to work with you, and that affects your bottom line of money. If you have a problem talking to people and you're always being condescending towards your subordinates and you're not respecting people and you think that, okay, you have the right to talk to them any type of way because you're mad and you can just let your anger out in any way, then that will affect your team. That will affect your performance. It will affect the productivity. It will affect money. So I agree on all points, definitely, that we need to continually develop ourselves to be more emotionally stable and mature, even as we develop ourselves psychologically, because, I mean, you know, they go hand in hand. I've been in situations that people came to me directly and said, you have a problem with talking to people, like my team and so forth. They would come to me directly. And by the way, anybody out there in business, make sure you get a team that comes to you directly and not just yes men and yes women. Get people that can talk to you.
How about that?
Absolutely, because they'll tell you like it is. And sometimes you need to hear the truth, because they tell you the truth behind closed doors. It saves you from when you get out in public talking to other people that way. You know, so my team
right.
would come to me and say, you need to get this under control. You're too aggressive here, or sometimes you're like a bull in a china closet, and you need to kind of calm down and sometimes talk to these people differently. I know you're ambitious and so forth. You know, so even myself, I have to check myself and say, okay, where did I go wrong? Or how could I have voiced that a little better? How could I have gotten the point across in a more kind and gentle way to this person right here who may be hurting from X, Y, Z that they experienced years ago? So I agree. Like that's a really strong point that you made about the emotional gravity, because it can hold you down, not just the people that we look out on, but looking at ourselves, it can even hold us down. So sometimes we have to look in the mirror and say, I better check this, because I'll end up losing, although I may not realize the loss immediately, but eventually it'll come back and it'll haunt me. So I love that. I love that phrase.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. I mean, I know, because I experience it myself. And because I am able to acknowledge it in myself, it's a lot easier for me to understand it with others. I mean, that's something which I have learned, is that the more honest and genuine I am with myself, and the more I understand about myself, the more I automatically, without any separate endeavor, mind you, I'm able to understand others. It's like,
yeah.
it's something which I had just discovered, because I used to work in the opposite fashion. I thought that I had to figure the world out and figure out all the people and figure out what makes them tick and why they're doing whatever and everything. And then I would figure everything out in everybody individually, okay? And then ultimately I would understand everything. What I didn't understand, which took me decades and decades to understand, was that if I understand myself, if I'm honest with myself, if I fix myself, I will automatically be able to contribute to others.
I like that.
It's natural, because I will actually have something which I can contribute. So if I don't have anything, if I don't recognize my own situation and begin to fix that, then I can't actually help others, even though I may be trying to critique everybody and analyze
right.
everybody, but it's backwards. And that reminds
right.
me of something which I think we touched on before, too. We talked about Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, that particular book for me, as well as Robert's teachings just in general, but the reason why that was so revolutionary to me, because I had read many books before I read Robert Kiyosaki's books. I had read many books on development, self-development, how to become wealthy, and so many things. I read Think and Grow Rich. I read so many books. But the thing that was unique to me about Robert Kiyosaki's presentation is that he said that in financial development and becoming wealthy, he said the difference between wealthy people and hardworking people is that wealthy people view and have a different relationship with money. Their relationship is different. Their vision of money, their understanding, and their emotional connection with money was different. And I had never seen it, heard it, or looked at it from that perspective. I just thought, hey, you know, this person accumulated more than this other person, and, you know, we just got to work harder to accumulate more. But actually, he awakened this awareness in me to the emotional connection that I have with wealth and wealth development, because it's about wealth development. It's not just about making more money. Mm-hmm. Right, as people like to talk about all the time, money and making more money, but it's more about wealth development. So right. Could you speak to that a little bit about that wealth development as opposed to that the simple idea of just, I need some more money, which, you right. know, people are functioning like that all the time, just trying to get some more money, but they never really solve the problem. Whereas wealth development, can you explain the difference between those two, between just trying to get some more money and developing wealth?
Absolutely. Well, first off, that is a groundbreaking book. I love that. One of my favorite on finances, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. If you haven't read it out there, I would definitely encourage everyone to go get a copy and check it out. But it comes down to that whole thing about the rat race. You know, when you say the wealth development versus people trying to get wealth, when people are trying to, quote, unquote, get wealth, often in a rat race trying to put in more time to get more money. But when you have wealth development, it's a whole different mindset because, you know, you're developing yourself along with the wealth, so you retain it and grow it, you know, whereas the person that's trying to get wealth, they're not really developing themselves. They're just maybe developing their leg muscles because they're running after the wealth, and they have no education to retain it, you know, and to make it grow. But people that are developing wealth, they're financially educated. They have plans for it. They have strategies. They have systems and so forth in place to do things with it. They have, measures to make sure that, you know, check it to make sure that they're checking their money and their flocks to make sure that they're doing good. So that's a different ball game altogether. And going back briefly to what you just said a moment ago, that you were able to look at yourself, and I forget how you phrased that, but I think it's important that we can take an objective look at ourselves and just be real and say, okay, what's going on with me? Like, am I tuned like this, or does this have to change? And that goes back to the whole thing with wealth development. When you develop yourself and you're looking at yourself objectively and you're considering in an objective fashion the things that you may be doing wrong and fixing it from, like, the outsider's point of view, and maybe asking your customers and so forth how they feel about your products and things like that, getting some coaching, getting some guidance and so forth, and you're being objective about the whole thing, you're really trying to improve. And when you improve your financial education, the money will flow along right with it. You'll retain more, and each dollar will be used effectively. So the person that has that go-get-the-wealth mindset, they're just chasing the money, you can give them the wealth, but they'll be broke tomorrow or in a couple of weeks or something like that. You know, we hear it all the time in a lot of stories sometimes, and people that are really attached to worldly things in the sense that they put the stuff before the growth of finances. So they'll go out and get the cars, they'll go out and do all this other stuff, yet they have no savings, they have no investments, they have no real estate, they have nothing except these things that they call assets, which are really depreciating, these cars and all this other stuff and the clothes on their back, that they go out and buy all this jewelry and this, that, and third, but they don't have any income streams. They don't have any hooks in the water. They don't have any fishing lines, you know, and they're quickly broke in no time because they're chasing the money and they're not doing the things to establish generational long-term wealth. You know, so there's a big difference. And, I would just encourage everybody, even as I do, keep reading, keep studying, keep learning, because wealth, I think, is a divine thing that's given to the people of the world by God. you know, when we do things the right way. So it's not a bad thing to be wealthy or well off. I think that it takes a certain level of discipline and maturity and knowledge to you know, really get our financial houses in order, because God is no fool. He wants us to do right with it and to be able to grow it and set our families and futures up, our future generations up with it, but also to be able to take care of not only ourselves and our present family, but also the extended family of the people in the world that may need our support. How can we give to charity if we have not? You know, so those are my two cents.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. That is, you touched on some other things there as well, like mentorship, self-development, asking questions, inquiring, learning from others. These may be habits that we have really haven't developed, even as adults. You know, just because you're 50 years old doesn't mean that actually you have all of these good habits, you know, and beliefs. So going along with the same theme that we're going as far as the psychological and emotional analysis, these habits that we have, many of us, many of our habits, like I have this theory, which is called the emotional makeover, or a habit makeover, or a belief makeover. You know, like we know about, you know, they have these reality shows about a house. They're going to make your house over, or they're going to make you over, right? Going to cut your hair, give you a new outfit and a tailor-made suit and some new makeup and all that, and you're going to be made over. It's called a makeover. But now, looking at that analogously, but how I think many of us, what we need is a belief makeover. We need an emotional makeover. Because of the many beliefs, the false beliefs that we have developed through our childhood and through our association and through living a life where we have always lacked power. We've always lacked the position of importance. You know, we may have had it, you know, intermittently here and there, but nothing enduring. And the fact that we haven't had it, if we do actually want to ascend and we want to build and create something powerful, something beautiful, you know, and develop wealth as opposed to just making some money, then it's going to require that we tap into that, look over our beliefs, our emotions. But that takes a certain amount of emotional strength.
Yes.
Right?
It definitely does. You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, yes, that takes a certain amount of emotional strength. And therefore, like you were mentioning, the mentorship is an essential thing. It's something like the subject of money and finance to me is a subject that can be discussed, analyzed, and critiqued endlessly.
Okay, oh, yeah.
Endlessly. Money, but then the thing I observe is that people – like, for instance, you could turn on the radio right now, and there'll be a sports station on. And it's 24-7. You got men sitting around talking about basketball, baseball, hockey, and every aspect of it. You know, the management of it, how long the contracts are, good contracts, good players, bad players. But where can you tune in to have conversation about finance?
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And just spending that much time watching all those sports, you could have created a business around the same topic and sold the information. You know what I mean? Some sugar informed if you watch it that much.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. You know, so I think there's so much treasure. It's like buried treasure that we need to dig up. We need to find and excavate and bring out and brush it off and clear it off. And in this way, we can develop wealth as individuals, as families, as communities, and as a people. We can do it, but it's going to require some internal work. It's not just about making some more money by hook or by crook. And as a matter of fact, if you wanted to, we were going to touch on the crime aspect of it, remember?
Oh, yeah.
we're kind of down to the last 5 minutes, so I don't really know if we could get into that.
Yeah, no problem.
But at this point, yeah, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, we don't have to discuss that since you're limited on time today. We can always probably do that some other time. If I'm able to be back, I welcome it.
Absolutely, because I think that's an important conversation right there about our money, our emotional attachment, and crime. Because crime, I mean, from a community perspective, crime has a lot of influence in our community as a people. You know, and that is, it's not something that we can just ignore. Like it doesn't exist. It does exist, and you know, we are perpetuating it. And I believe again, it has to do with our self conception and what we believe, what our beliefs about attaining wealth. For some reason, many of us believe that you know we can acquire a great amounts of money through criminal activities, but there's not an equal number of us who can look at it from a legal perspective and see the same opportunity and be as ambitious. You know what I'm saying? Be as ambitious in that world as we may be in the underworld. So, again, I really believe that it goes back to belief.
Yeah.
Yes? What'd you say, David?
I'm sorry. No, I was going to say, that's definitely a deep topic. I agree on all points. I mean, the whole paradigm shift we need in our minds, our hearts, in terms of the criminal side of money, that's deserving of its own discussion, I imagine. But, it's all on how you think, how you feel, and even if it's not, quote-unquote, attaining wealth, I mean, I think that, we all, those that would be right with it and so forth, sure, we should be pushing for wealth development, as you mentioned earlier, to set up, to do more good in the world, but also to set up our future generations. But even for people out there or us in general who may or may not attain, quote-unquote, wealth, I still believe we can have a certain level of financial success even if it's not, quote-unquote, wealth. And it comes down to, like you mentioned, changing our mind, changing our emotions about money, changing what we know, changing our attitude, changing the relationship, as you mentioned about our Robert Kiyosaki, changing our relationship with money and how we perceive it. It's a good thing. It's not evil. The love of money is the root of all evil, but not money. Money is just sitting there waiting to be used the right way, So that's what I think about it all. I think that we should be able to think positively about it and should find ways and look within ourselves to develop ourselves, in different ways, spiritually and intellectually and so forth, to be better money stewards. And when we're better money stewards, we attract more money and we do better with it, So that's what I think it's all about, being better stewards and learning ways to do more with what we have.
Excellent, sir. Excellent, sir. We're down to the last couple of moments, and at this point, I don't see any requests for questions or comments. So what I'd like to ask, if you could share with us what you're going to share about your dirty little financial secret, if you could share with that as we wrap up the show and then give your contact information and so forth.
Absolutely. So I want to take you back to when I was a child, growing up in Baltimore, and me and one of my cousins, we were about 7 years old, and one of our uncles came up, and we lived in the city at the time. And in the city, there were all these corner stores owned by a lot of Asian people and so forth. Asian gentlemen owned this one corner store in the city of Baltimore. So we were young, it was years ago, somewhere around the early 80s and something like that. But my cousin and I, we were just in the house, and our uncle came over, and I think it was like he just came over to visit the family, and he saw us, and he said, "Oh, I want to give you some money." And we were like, we were all excited because we wanted to go to the store and get some candy. So he gave us $1, and he said, "Y'all spit $1." So we were like 7 years old. We didn't know too much about money, so he literally spit $1. We went and got some scissors and cut it in half. So he had one half and I had the other half. So we walked up to the store, and we got all this candy in to the counter. And the guy who owned the store, he said no, he would not accept it. And we couldn't get the candy, but in our mind, we were like, this is good money. Like, this is good money. What are you talking about? We can't get the candy. He's like, no, you can't get it because the dollar's ripped. And that was the first time I really understood the value of money. Like, it has to be, you know, from the time you get it to the time you present it to somebody else, it has to be in good form. And it hurts, because if you walk that far and you want some candy, and you're a kid, and you don't have appropriate means to get the candy, then you really will appreciate the value of money. And I take it to where we are today, that we have to learn to appreciate the value of money. If you don't know what you're going to do with the next penny that you get, how will you know what to do with the next $1,000 you get, or the next $100 you get? But if you can break that penny down, every single penny, your money is going someplace that you direct it to, and it's not going to where it wants to go. Because if you let it go where it wants to go, it'll go wherever it wants to go. We have to direct it and control our pennies.
Wow. That's interesting. I could appreciate that analogy, because you know, the fact is that I think that also illustrates that when you have a misunderstanding about money, your results are not going to be good. It's not going to be good. You have to have a proper understanding. Like you and your cousin,
right,
you said, y'all had a misconception. And, it reminds me, too. Remember Robert Kiyosaki? His poor dad? I think it was his poor dad. He asked his poor dad, how do you get more money? And he told him, you have to make money. You have to make money. So Robert and his friend decided they were going to make their own coins. So, right, they made these little molds and they melted down. I don't know if it was plastic or whatever it was. They melted something down and they started making coins. And his poor dad, when they saw what they were doing, they were down in the basement making these coins, he became angry at them. He became emotional. He responded emotionally. Where his rich dad did not have a negative emotional relationship with money, but his poor dad did. So when his poor dad saw that, he was like, no, this is wrong. This is a bad thing you're doing. This is really horrible. This is counterfeiting. You're counterfeit. That's counterfeit. That's a bad thing. So that's very similar to what you're saying in your situation, where you guys also got some information, but without the proper understanding, you had a misunderstanding about money, and your results were not good. So I think that, you know, that's key, man. It's just key on so many aspects.
Yeah, and we could have taped it, but we didn't. So misunderstanding.
So did you tape it?
We did not. I think we threw it away or something. We didn't know any better. I don't think we took it to any adult or anything.
Wow. Yeah, man. That's a great analogy, man. You should definitely use that to enlighten other people that, hey, it's in other words, even if you work all hard, like people always say, oh, you got to work hard. You work hard. You accumulate this money, right? And you sticking it under your mattress or wherever you're putting it. If you don't understand how to use it, when you get to the store to get your candy, you're going to lose it.
That's right.
You're going to lose it.
And your candy. You're going to lose the candy, too.
Hey, and that wraps up our show for today. David, would you please, one more time, could you please give us your contact information?
Absolutely. So you can reach me at David G. Newby on Twitter. I'm at the Revive Movement at revive-movement.com. You can look me up on LinkedIn. Just look up my name, David. Last name is Newby, N-E-W-B-Y. I have a group on LinkedIn called The Empowerment Zone. You can find that at bit.ly/joinTheEZ. And I have one group on Facebook called The Revive Movement at bit.ly/Revive Movement. And those are my contacts. And one more thing, thank you so much for having me. Mr. Hutchinson, thank you, Tribe Family Channel, for this incredible network that you're continuing to do and provide platforms for people, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, David. Thank you. So, and thank everyone for listening. There will also be a podcast of this show. So even those of you who are not able to listen to the show right away, this show will appear again and again, and you'll be able to have access to it. So
Thank you very much for participating in Financial Intelligence. I am your host, Stephen Hutchinson, and I would like to give my proper due respect to Tribe Family Channel, Ms. Beverly Johnson, as well as Genius is Common, and Mr. Bruce George, other supporters and sponsors of our program. Please remember, people, that it is a requirement that you fix yourself first. Fix yourself first. That is psychologically, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And in that way, you'll be in a powerful position where you can help others. And that includes your finances as well. So this is another complete edition of Financial Intelligence. We will be back again in 2 weeks. We will reach out to everyone. So thank you very much. This is Stephen Hutchinson signing off on Financial Intelligence. Power up.